Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to a Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join in the studio and to talk about our center, our program, social justice, or different cultures. Today, my visitor is Richard Miranda. Richard, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you, Beate. It's my pleasure to be here.
Richard was born and raised in Bombay. He migrated with his family to New Zealand in 2003 and is an active member of the Catholic community in Avondale. Richard is also co-producer of the radio program Susiga Danpar, a program with and for Konkani speakers here on Planet FM 104.6. Richard, the other day I interviewed Father William Falcao, who was a visiting priest from Mumbai, or he said Bombay is the international name of the city in Western India. He told us that his language was Marathi. Is this language related to your language, Konkani?
Let me just talk about this difference between Mumbai and Bombay. Bombay is the European name or the British name that was given to the location on the western coast, to the island, seven islands. And Mumbai comes from Mumba Devi. That's the deity that was worshipped by the local people in Mumbai. So they called it Mumbai. The Europeans called it, or the Britishers called it, Bombay. So over a period of time, there was a lot of pressure on the government to change the name of Bombay to Mumbai to reflect the culture and the original settlers of those seven islands. And somewhere around in the 1980s, they changed the name of Bombay to Mumbai. Regarding Father William Falcao, he comes from a certain part of Bombay or Mumbai, which is the northern part, which is closer to the mainland in Maharashtra. So it is Vasai or Virar or Thane, that's the area that he comes from. Now, Konkani and Marathi are different languages because of the dialect because of the pronunciations that you use in your speaking, but they all come from the base language, which is the Indo-Aryan languages as such. They use the same script, which is the Devanagari script as such. So the alphabets that are used in Marathi are also used in Konkani, which is the official language of Goa province. Mm-hmm. So in Father Falcao's village, they use the Marathi words or the alphabets in the scriptures in which they write. In Goa too, they use that. But if you go down further on the western coast, they use the Devanagari script, which is the Kannada script or the Tulu script. Tulu is also not, it's a dialect. So they depend on the Kannada script. So it's a different script altogether.
When you talk about script, is it the writing?
It's the writing. It's the alphabets that you use. So when you look at the churches in Goa, they use the Roman script. They use the English script. Whereas the churches in Vasai, Virar, etc., they use the Marathi script. So the language is different, but the dialects are, the origins are the same. The scripts are the same as such. So Father Falcao comes from Vasai. So they speak a dialect called the Agri, or the Agri Koli, or they speak a Konkani, Christian Konkani, or they speak what is called as Brahmani Konkani, or they speak what is called as Gaur Saraswat Konkani.
Oh my God, it's
so there are different dialects, you see.
Yeah.
And so Father Falcao is right that his language that he speaks in is Marathi, and it is sounding the same. To give you an example, the wheel.
Yeah.
In Konkani is called Chakra.
Chakra, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, in Konkani is called Chak.
Chak.
In Marathi is called Chakra.
Because, chakra is also in the different chakra in the body, isn't it? Something.
Yeah, that's the seven chakras that is there. The kundalis is what they call it as such.
So you have chak and chakra.
Yeah.
So it's as related as maybe German and English.
Absolutely.
Because you can understand a few words, but it's a different language.
Just like Spanish. If you go to South America, the Spanish spoken there is quite different in dialect and in communication as compared to Spanish spoken in Europe.
Well, I don't quite agree with it as a dialect, because that's a variation, but we don't want to go into the depth of this. But thank you for clarifying regarding Marathi and Konkani. So when you are in Bombay or in Mumbai, you can speak either one, either language.
Well, you speak in Marathi, everybody will understand. But once again, Marathi has got several dialects.
Yeah.
So they've got the Vardhi dialect, they've got the Brahmanical Peshawar dialect, they have got the Kolhapuri dialect. So in Bombay, it is a mixture of Marathi and Hindi, and they call it as Bombaya Hindi. So there are mixtures of English words, Konkani words, Marathi words, North Indian words, etc., that go to make the language. What they say is, as far as it is okay of what you want to communicate to somebody, fair enough, who bothers about the language, as long as I get my message across.
Okay, that's an attitude. But the language that everybody understands in Bombay is English? Or would it be the Marathi English?
Well, they speak what is called Bombaya Hindi.
Okay.
You can speak Marathi depending on which part of the city you're in.
Yeah.
They will follow it, but they may respond to you in Hindi. They may follow it.
Okay. And you are the co-producer of a Konkani program.
Yes.
And you said Konkani is spoken in Goa mainly?
No, Konkani is a language which is spoken right along the coast, the western coast, which starts from Danu, which is part of the border, northern part of the border of the province of Maharashtra, and goes almost 800 kilometers down the coast right up to Kerala. Now, it gained prominence in Goa because the Portuguese, who were in control of Goa, they tried to give it a distinct flavor, okay, and they tried to recognize it as such. So almost 30% of the Konkani-speaking people in Goa are Catholics.
30%?
Yes, 30%. So it's quite a large population. So in fact, almost about 60 to 70% of the population in Goa speaks Konkani, but not necessarily the same dialect.
Yeah, okay.
So as you go along the coast, you come to Karwar, you come to Mangalore. So Mangalore is a huge settlement. So the people who are Catholics in Karwar and Mangalore, they speak distinct, very different Konkani.
You're showing very well how difficult it is if somebody lives in New Zealand and says, oh, these are Indian Catholics. Because where do they come from? They don't necessarily share the same language.
Correct.
They speak English when they are here in New Zealand, or the majority speak English.
Absolutely.
But it's just difficult to know. You have to know where they come from, and then they have different backgrounds and different traditions and different saints, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Well,
and
that's how the invaders, or I would say the colony makers.
Colonizers.
That's how they sort of tried to get hold of the local population. The Portuguese followed a particular route. The Brits followed a particular route. In fact, most of these places were ruled by the Mughals.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was Maharashtra, whether it was Goa, whether it was Karnataka.
The Mughals are an Indian tribe.
No, it's not an Indian tribe. They came from the
Mongolia.
Middle Eastern. Yeah, they came from the Middle Eastern region. So they all sort of assembled through the Khyber Pass in the northern area. And they came to rule the whole of India. So when distinct kings and territories started breaking up, that's where the Brits and Portuguese started grabbing the territories as such. And so their influences are there in different parts of the country. So the Portuguese used different methodologies how to sort of convert people into Christianity. And so they use different icons, different relics, different approaches. So if you go down to Kerala, the Catholics are typically Orthodox, whereas you come up to Mangalore, they are fairly European.
Yeah. You must have a beautiful country, because if so many people were interested in living there.
Oh, 1.3 billion people, they can't go wrong.
But you've come to New Zealand.
Yeah.
Okay, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Richard Miranda, and he is a co-producer of a Konkani language program here on Planet FM, and the program is called Susiga Danpar. What does that mean, Richard?
Susigat has got its origin both in Portuguese and in the Konkani language. And if it is used in the right senses, Susigat means it is a calm and peaceful. Okay, but it can also be used in a little bit of a demeaning way of saying that this person is lazy. Okay, yeah. Danpar means afternoon. So our program is between 3:45 and 4:45. It's just after the afternoon gets over and you get
on a Saturday.
So we call it as a calm, peaceful afternoon program.
Wonderful.
That is why it is called Susigat Danpar.
For the weekend and before vigil masses start.
Correct.
You have some time to reflect and have a quiet afternoon and be reminded of your Konkani language, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have any statistics on numbers of Konkani speakers here in Auckland?
Just let me give you a perspective. There are roughly around 3.5 to 4 million people who speak the Konkani language across the globe. Of which about two-thirds of them are in India, spread along the coast, predominantly in Goa and in Mangalore. In Mangalore, it's a minority population of just about 1 million people, whereas in Goa, it's close to around 2.5 to 3, I would say. Very, very close to 2.5 rather than 3 as such. Most of us who are in Auckland, they have their origins back either in Mangalore or Goa or other parts of the country where they are ancestors settled as such. I would put the diaspora, which is related to the Konkani language, roughly between 2,500 to 3,000 people, of which just about 1,000 people speak the language with some amount of fluency.
Oh, that's wonderful. 1,000 people is quite
yes,
a lot.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and your program is broadcast on Saturday afternoons, as
we
said. And last Saturday, you integrated one of our archived Muffin Talk programs into your broadcast.
Yes, I did.
Can you tell us more about it?
Well, you know, we are in the season of Easter. We are in the Easter octave. And it is very ironical that in the city or in the country, a Christian country like New Zealand, we are talking about euthanasia. And the parliament is debating David Seymour's bill on voluntary right to take away your life. And Easter talks about hope. Easter talks about life eternal as such. And so we picked up this program between where Professor David Richmond spoke to you about what euthanasia is all about, what does the word voluntary mean, and does the bill have the safeguards in New Zealand to make it truly voluntary in nature? Now, I've heard and read several politicians, both in the parliament and outside the parliament in New Zealand, where they say, hey, listen, it is not really voluntary. And there is enough amount of scope within the bill which could be abused. And in fact, I was startled by the statistics that David Richmond made about Denmark, Holland and Switzerland, where 32% of those who were euthanized had not given their consent.
And it's all, even if they've given the consent, you don't know what is the background.
Absolutely.
You have to look at the background and the context. Because
Absolutely.
If you put somebody in a position where the person feels like he or she is a burden and then finally agrees, okay, is that voluntary?
Yes, yes. So in fact, I sort of brought up this particular documentary that has been published on Mount Sinai. There is a documentary film on the YouTube. It is also available in the internet on Mount Sinai Hospital, which is one of the best hospitals in the world, where almost about 60% of the admissions are for terminal illness. Almost 60% of the people don't go back. But they ran a wonderful program where they actually take you through the process of telling you whether you want to get yourself euthanized or you don't want to get yourself euthanized. And particularly people who are on life support equipment or life support systems and who are completely vegetables or who are completely in their last stages of life, There is a long drawn and very educated process to the family members and near and dear ones to tell them what is the consequences of pulling off these equipments. Similarly, people who are conscious, who can make their own decisions, they are also taken through the educative process. And these are well documented.
And where is this Mount Sinai?
Mount Sinai is a hospital in New York. It is one of the best hospitals in the world. And so they ran this documentary to tell. And at the end of the program, the director of medicine, who's the head of the hospital, says, "Hey, listen, we may be the most educated, talented, and knowledgeable professionals in life, but in the hospital, in the medical fraternity. But in life, we are not the ones who can take a decision. It is not my choice."
And in fact, the doctor is supposed to rescue lives.
Yes. He says, so we may have everything at our disposal, but we may not be in a position to bring back a person to life. So it is a choice that we leave it to either the patient or their family members to take that call. It is not my call.
Yeah. And
which is so unlike the bill that is being introduced in New Zealand, and many people are not aware of that.
Oh, yes. And the problem is that with Easter, people are away, holidays, and at the same time, you have the deadlines for
making
in the
submissions. Yes, absolutely.
That is quite challenging. And thank you for promoting this interview further that I did with David Richmond.
Yes.
I did it in 2014-15.
Yeah.
And there have been several bills with slight changes, but euthanasia per se is a problem. So it's even if the bills are slightly changed, it's still taking somebody else's life and you can't reverse it, as he said.
Yes. Yes.
And David Richmond, he gave some examples of people who had the most beautiful weeks of their lives at the end of life,
mm-hmm.
Just because people gave them hope and people gave them something to look forward to. So it's something irreversible. But it still seems like there are a lot of people who don't quite understand the consequences of a euthanasia law, if that ever comes into reality. I think you made a very good point. We are celebrating Easter, the Feast of Life. And at the same time, we have to defend life by responding to the proposed bill on euthanasia. And in this respect, we have to remember that the online petition form can be signed only until Sunday, uh-huh. this Sunday, 28th of April.
Uh-huh.
And from the diocese there, we have received that link, carealliance.org.nz. And on this website, it says also, a full analysis of 38,707 submissions currently to the Justice Select Committee uh-huh. show that 90.2% oppose David Seymour's end-of-life choice bill.
Uh-huh.
This is a record number of submissions for any bill before the House. They paint a heartfelt and deeply human picture of the views held by many New Zealanders
uh-huh.
who have considered the implications of legalizing euthanasia and assisted suicide and had sufficient strength of feeling to write in and make their views known. And if you like to listen to my interview with Professor David Richmond, you can do it like Richard, who checked out the podcast archives on the website for Muffin Talk. And the interview is available through this site. Richard, have you had any feedback from your broadcast last Saturday?
Well, I interacted with, we had a family gathering, a community family gathering yesterday afternoon. I interacted with some of them. And there were still some very staunchly sort of supporting the bill by saying that at the end of the day, it's my life, it's my choice. My response to them was, hey, you didn't create that life. You were the creation of the immense love between two people. So you didn't create the life, so therefore you don't have a right to take it away.
But what if somebody says, I would like to decide myself, and then changes his or her mind?
Well, there's a wonderful book written by Dr. Atul Gawande. Dr. Atul Gawande is both a very well-known journalist as well as a medical practitioner at the Mayo Clinic in the United States. He was one of the members, or rather a founder member, of Obamacare. And the book that he's written is called
The book.
The book that he's written is all about the different types of patients that come to him, of all basically cancer patients, terminally ill patients, etc. And the first choice that he gives to them is that, would you like to continue in this fashion, or would you like to go through the medical process as such, chemotherapy and whatnot as such, or do you want to go undergo a surgery? And in a vast majority of cases, the people make the choice to continue as they are, including his father, who was a doctor and who had terminal cancer. He continued in that fashion for a long period of time, despite the pain and the difficulties that he went through. All that he ends up in his book to saying is, hey, listen, life is beautiful. And if you can live it and make the best of it, please do it. Don't put an end to it. The name of the book is Being Mortal. So he says, all of us have to die, but you make the best of it. Doesn't matter. So he's given an example of a lady who had a throat cancer, where it became quite difficult for her to sustain that pain and enjoy her life. So he says, I can do a surgery on that portion of your throat, but you will not be able to speak, you will not be able to live your life normally, and you will have to constantly keep on coming to the hospital for treatment. So she decided not to go with the surgery. She decided just to take the minimal amount of medicine. She lived for about 7 or 8 years, traveled all the world over, enjoyed her time with her family, and passed away peacefully in the most natural, normal way. So my submission to the youth was, hey, listen, yes, you have a choice, but make the right choice.
And the other thing is, if you, like with the euthanasia bill, where you ask a doctor to do it, the doctor is not trained to take lives away. The doctor is trained to save lives. And I think that's a huge challenge.
Yes.
And
yes.
What happens if you say, well, I can't imagine if I have this and this disease ever, then I would like to die. But if you're in that position, you might say, oh, maybe I don't want it. You change your mind, but then you can't speak anymore.
Uh-huh.
So there are lots of implications. And also what David Richmond said of this woman, who said she's going to hospital, but she doesn't want to be killed. She wants to be there to be taken care of. And then in that case, the doctor decided then he needed the bed for somebody who had better chances to survive. And so...
I like that example that he gave. And yeah, I also liked... I was quite shocked to hear that many elderlies living in Holland, Denmark and Switzerland, they would rather go to Germany, where euthanasia is not legal.
Because you can't trust the doctor anymore.
Yeah.
But I also heard an example of a man who was very ill, and his whole family decided they will look after him, and they took turns. And after a few months, they got very tired. It was a lot of stress for them to look after them, and they said to the doctor, can you help us? I think that he is suffering, and we can't cope with it anymore. And then the doctor said, no, I can't do anything, but I can help you finding somebody to care for him. And he found a place where they had palliative care, and he put the man in that palliative care, and the family took turns in visiting the father, and they had the most beautiful and peaceful time together, because they didn't have the burden of caring for him anymore, but they had the joy of spending the last months with him.
A wonderful thing which somebody shared with me yesterday is that back in India, we have very few places for palliative care. There are very few hospitals or places where you can send your elderly people who are in terminal situations as such. So they have converted their small little houses. One part of the house has been converted into a virtual hospital. They managed to get beds, to make the person who is terminally sick comfortable. They've got all the life support equipment kept ready in case if there is an, and they have a contact person around the community to come in case there is an emergency. Mind you, it is such a challenge in the city of Mumbai where the maximum size of a house is roughly around 80 square meters, which is 800 square feet, which is a double bedroom and a hall, which is very tiny, compact. But despite those discomforts, there are about five cases the person narrated where the elderly who are in their 80s or 90s are on the bed without bed source. In fact, one of them passed away yesterday, day before yesterday, and she was tended to at her home. She lived for almost a year and a half. So these are wonderful examples, and this is what I would request to the people in New Zealand and those who are looking at this bill as the only panacea for, you know, the pain that person goes through or the misfortunes of ill health that they go through, that they need to look at these examples. In spite of the difficulties, they value life.
Exactly, that, like the presentation that I had invited David Richmond to come to with Kathy Lynch together, the title was Merciful Care instead of Merciful Killing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Richard. And well, you've mentioned quite a lot about India. That's great.
Yes.
And I think it's good that you broadcast on the radio, so your Konkani speakers in Mumbai and in Goa, and they might also listen to your programs.
Yes, they do. They do. In fact, I get a feedback from them. A large number of our listeners are in those parts of the country, and that's why we have been ranked for 2 years in succession on Access Radio as the most popular internet radio.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you.
And so thank you very much, Richard, and I wish you all the best for the radio program, and you're always happy to share some of our programs. So, because what we promote in Muffin Talk is for everyone. That's why we have it on the radio, and that's why we put it on the internet.
So next, not next weekend, this coming weekend, we have a Konkani play being broadcasted. This is the first of its kind on in Auckland for the Konkani-speaking people. As well as to carry this message of promoting Konkani, we have a screening of a Konkani film on the 5th of May called Questão de Confusão. It's a bit Portuguese in terminology or pronunciation, but it means issues of confusion, and it talks about religion, ego, and humanity.
And I think there's more on your Facebook page and on your link. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
And what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? Our next Muffin Meeting will be on Wednesday, the 1st of May, 10:30 to 12:30. We'll have Rachel Marr and Eric Matthews, two pastoral workers to the Catholic Deaf. And their presentation will be about, with sign language, we are equal and accessible. On the 8th of May, we'll have our annual intergenerational forum. We are inviting students and seniors to register with us if you like to discuss topics of relevance in a positive atmosphere. This is an event with a limited number of participants, so please register with us. On the 18th of May, Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard will facilitate an introductory workshop to Christian meditation. Please note that the workshops with Father Stuart Sella are cancelled, but we're happy that on Wednesday, the 5th of June, Brother Kieran Finn will come and he'll give a presentation on the Holy Spirit and Pentecost. And for all events at our centre, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09 638 6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. And thank you again, Richard, and I wish everyone a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. And think about it, on Sunday is the deadline for the submission, and we'll put the link on our Facebook page also.
Thank you, Beate. Thank you. It was our pleasure.
The love of God will be our joy.